Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Beacon. Welcome, everybody. I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I am Sandy Murillo.
And you are listening to The Beacon, like I said in the opening. And I just want to wish somebody a happy birthday, and that somebody is the person sitting across from me, Sandy.
That's right. Happy birthday to me.
Yeah, she's turning the big 3-0. How's that feel?
You know, it's... It'll be on Saturday, so I don't know exactly how it feels, but the celebration feels great so far.
Yeah, you've already started your
exactly.
celebration.
I already started it. I declared officially, at least to myself, that it was going to be a week-long celebration.
Excellent. And how did you start off your week of celebration?
Well, since my birthday's on Saturday, I started the Saturday before, so the 19th, had a lovely cruise out on Lake Michigan, and enjoyed the air and water show. Spent time with my parents, and for them, you know, I'd done this in a while. You know, I'd gone on a cruise around the lake, many years ago. But my mom and my dad, they had never actually gone to one, so this was a It was their first experience. They loved it. My mom was still talking. She was still raving this morning about how she loved the whole experience. You know, it was very, very nice. You know, it was an all-you-can-eat buffet, DJ.
Very nice.
They had a nice deck where we could, like, you know, go and see the planes
and the skyline.
Exactly. So yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful view. Like if any of you ever get a chance to take any of those cruises, or you know a friend with a boat that's on Lake Michigan, you should check it out. Just the view from Lake Michigan heading towards the city, it's a sight to behold, because even from Navy Pier you could go all the way to the end of the pier and look back and just marvel at what a great city we do have here in Chicago, and the amazing architecture from afar. It's quite awesome. And
and like you said, it doesn't have to be a cruise. It can be, you know, like you said, if your friend has a boat, or, you know, I know that, you know, there are many tours, you know, around Lake Michigan are available.
We took
sightseeing tours.
Yeah, we talked about it last year, the sailing program that they actually have for the Judd Goldman sailing program. That's an opportunity for people who are disabled to be able to take a few sailing lessons if you'd like. So yeah, there's lots of opportunities to get out on Lake Michigan, and especially in the summer, you know, you get to have a little bit break from the heat, because it's, you know, the lake keeps you nice and cool. So yeah, I encourage anyone, if you get a chance, to hop on one of those cruise vessels or boat of a friend, and enjoy some summer evenings, mornings, afternoons, whatever you can get out there.
Any time of day.
Yep.
You know, like you said, the breeze is great. And I think that for me, it's something that I never get tired of, you know, being in the lake, enjoying that breeze, you know, even the smell of the breeze. You know, I just love it. It's one of those things that I absolutely love about Chicago. And, you know, the air and water show, you know, obviously I was not able to enjoy the visual aspect of it. But, you know, this was our first time there in the city while, you know, during the air and water show. And even for me, although I couldn't see it, it was pretty remarkable, like hearing the different planes take off and fly around. And, you know, my parents were in awe about, you know, seeing the whole thing. And so it was great. I highly recommend it, you know. Not just during the air and water show, but any time of the year, any time of the summer, especially, I should say.
Yeah, and you actually started off your birthday week pretty much with your favorite place in the city, which is Navy Pier.
Navy
so
Pier.
What about Navy Pier is it that you like so much?
You know, I've always thought that I should have been, like, either in my previous life or I must have been a city person, because I just love the whole bustle, the whole, you know, atmosphere. And I think that's really what I love, like, about Navy Pier. There's so much attraction, so much, you know, different places to go and things to see, food to taste and smell. And I just love the whole atmosphere. Like, I know in that CBS, or one of the stories, one of the reports that NBC5 was recently here to interview me about a totally unrelated thing, internet accessibility. But that is something that I mentioned in the beginning, that, you know, I love sightseeing, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And my friends will be like, well, but how? You can't see, so how can you, you know, take in the different things? But, you know, in other words, I like Navy Pier because I get to experience it with my other senses.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes people forget that you can enjoy an attraction without seeing it. Like, just being able to listen to, maybe it's, this place has music, great music.
Yeah.
Like you said, great taste with foods, and with great taste of foods, you have great smells. So, you know,
I love the churro factory that's there.
Oh, churros are great.
Oh, my gosh.
They are so good. You get me in front of a churro cart, and I probably buy the person out. So
that's it.
Those are very, very good. Well, we have a show to get to, the rest of the show, and we have a segment coming up that Bill Jurek will be doing.
He'll be talking about the Citizens Utility Board with our great friend Jim Chilson.
Okay.
And I know that you, Brett, have a very interesting segment too.
Yeah, I actually was able to interview the Neo Futurist Theater. They actually put together 30 plays in 60 minutes, which is quite a fun, upbeat, fast-paced, fun time. And then we have also your segment after that.
So it's with Vineet Agarwal, who is doing a very exciting project to hopefully debunk some of the myths that, you know, are out there about people with experiencing different situations.
And then we have a segment that has been recently named, a new name for it. It's Luke's Laboratory. Luke Scribbins and Brian Hawkins will end out the show, talking about some assistive tech and what's coming down the line.
All right. Well, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Bill's segment.
Hey, everybody. It's Brian Hawkins, director here at Chris Radio. Wanted you all to know that now, no matter where you go, you can take Chris Radio with you. That means you can tune in at home, in the car, or wherever you are. All you have to do is download the TuneIn app from the App Store, Google Play, or Microsoft apps to your favorite device, install, then search for Chris Chicago. And if you're not sure when a program airs, our program schedule is included for your convenience on the TuneIn app. It's just another way to tune in to your information station.
I'm surprised I'm going to be able to get this phone call in over all the shouting and screaming about the AT&T decision to do away with the landline. Jim Chilson is here from the Citizens Utility Board, and I'm surprised they're not picketing your office.
Yeah, people are mad. They've been calling in and saying, you know, they feel very strongly about this. And, you know, I don't think AT&T should not underestimate, nor the FCC, which is, it's now before the FCC, but those two entities should not underestimate how strongly people feel about the landlines. Either they have a landline, or they know somebody who does, or they just are angry at AT&T and don't want them, you know, to always get their way. So the one thing that we felt good about is, you know, this fight isn't over. We're going to the FCC now, but after the legislature passed AT&T's bill, which opens the door for them to eventually end landline service, for the first time in this whole debate, they said, well, you know, it's not going to go away immediately. It will be a few years. It could be. They said it could be. They didn't say it would be. It could be years before we get rid of of landlines. And our opinion was, you know, from the very beginning, we had said that AT&T wasn't ready to say goodbye to landlines, that there were too many people who still depend on landlines as their most reliable connection to 911 and medical monitoring and, you know, and home security systems. And we think that this is making that announcement. AT&T is acknowledging, you know, that it's not ready yet. So the bad thing about it is this bill now lets AT&T set the timetable for getting rid of landline phones. Illinois should really be setting that timetable because, like I said before, there are still a significant number of people who depend on traditional landlines.
Now, let's clarify this, okay?
Yes.
They're trying to get rid of the copper line. Is that what it is?
Very good point, because they often confuse the issue because they'll say, well, there are modern landlines, and that's internet telephony, or U-verse, they call it.
Right.
That's where it goes over the internet. We're talking about plain old telephone service, which goes over a copper line. However, what also confuses it is, for example, my in-laws have U-verse where they live, and the last mile of the call with internet telephony ends on the copper network. So AT&T still uses that copper network. They make it sound like it's such a burden, which completely, you know, overlooks the fact that all of those customers are paying their bills, and, you know, they're some of the most loyal customers AT&T has are their landline customers.
Sure.
They pay their bills, and AT&T still uses that copper network. It's not like they're going to rip up that copper network or they're going to sell it like Verizon did a few years ago in Illinois. Verizon sold all its landlines to Frontier. But that copper network is still very valuable to AT&T. So, you know, AT&T had been saying, oh, we're falling behind. These landlines are sapping so many resources. We can't modernize our network. And now that they get this bill passed, they say, well, it's going to take a few years to get rid of the landlines, which kind of also begs the question, why did AT&T have to pass this legislation now? And we think it's because they just wanted consumer advocates and the state of Illinois out of the discussion about how we protect vulnerable phone customers.
When are we going to, are we ever going to control or regulate, that's probably the better word, are we ever going to regulate cell phones?
That's a really good question. My opinion is that, and this isn't Cub talking, but my opinion is that ship has left port. It's very difficult once, you know, it's a lightly regulated market. And, you know, I think it depends. You know, if you get the right people at the FCC, there might be some, you know, some movement towards protecting consumers a little more in the cell phone market. But,
sure. You
know, it's very difficult. Now, again, we don't want to be seen as Luddites. You know, I have a smartphone. I love my smartphone. You know, there are people on staff who have internet telephony. You know, there's no question these technologies are great. However, as you point out, they're very lightly regulated, and they're not always they're not always reliable, you know, for people who really need those landline phones. I always say a landline, you know, it never goes out in a power or internet outage. It doesn't ever need to be charged, and it doesn't leave 911 dispatchers guessing.
Right
now, cell phone 911, they call it advanced 911, that would allow a dispatcher to directly to trace where a cell phone 911 call is coming from, just like they can do with landlines. Well, advanced 911 is not supposed to be fully deployed in Illinois until 2020, and that's aspirational, so that's 2020 at the earliest. And we're saying, what is the rush? Don't you know,
right. Why
get rid of landlines for people who really depend on them if you can't, you know, offer, if the service isn't as reliable as if the cell phone service isn't as reliable as landlines?
Jim, are most of the customers who want to use a landline, are they older?
You know, I don't want to stereotype, because we have a lot of older people. Like I mentioned, my in-laws, you know, they're in their 70s,
right.
And they're very, you know, they have iPads, and they're, you know, they're very connected. They have, you know, internet and everything. But, you know, I think there are a lot of seniors who still, you know, rely on landlines, and they rely on it because of medical monitoring. They rely on it because of 911. They maybe have home security systems that they want to keep. So I think there are seniors. There's a couple different groups who really depend on landlines. Seniors, then you have people with medical conditions who, you know, might be older or younger.
Sure.
Then you have people in rural areas. I was just talking to WGN Radio this morning, and the guy said, my relatives are concerned about this. You know, if you live out in an area that doesn't have good cell phone service, you're very concerned. You need that landline. And then there's an interesting group that ABC7 recently did a profile on, younger couples. And I put myself in this group, although I'm not young anymore. But when my kids were, we have a landline still.
Sure.
And when my kids were, before they got cell phones or smartphones, they needed a phone that was reliable in 911 just in case, you know, some type of medical emergency would happen. They would, you know, they would be able to call 911 and that call could be traced directly to our residence. And also, I didn't want my kids, you know, using my cell phone to make, you know, to make phone calls. So,
sure.
You know, I think there are also younger families who want a reliable connection to 911 and they want to be able to, you know, they want that to be their kid's first phone. And I think that that's, you know, that's important. So there are a lot of groups. And, you know, our point is that we understand companies need to be healthy. AT&T has made $58 billion in profits over the last 5 years.
Whoa.
It was doing fine under the current consumer protections. There's, you know, there's no reason that AT&T has plenty of resources to modernize its network and take care of its most vulnerable customers. And that was the other thing they said, well, this bill is about modernization. There was not one sentence in that bill that required AT&T to modernize its network. And so we're very frustrated about that, and that was hard for a lot of people to take that. But we were very, this fight now goes to the FCC. We're not giving up. And actually today, if you go to citizensutilityboard.org, you can actually click a button and you can send a message to Congress telling you how important you think landlines are to Illinois.
Yeah, thank God that they have to get that kind of permission from the FCC, because the FCC could easily turn them down.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to go slow.
Right.
I think that's what we would say. We fully acknowledge that eventually people are going to choose other services, but they're not choosing them. Not everybody is choosing them now. And AT&T would say, well, this is only a small percentage of our customers, but, you know, we look at it in terms of people, not percentages.
Exactly, that's for sure. Talking a little bit now about some of the other utilities.
Yeah.
What are we expecting from ComEd and from Peoples Gas, NiGas, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's a couple interesting cases. Actually, all three of those are involved, are at the center of some interesting cases. Number one, ComEd asked for a $96 million rate hike that will increase bills by about roughly a dollar a month, and we're fighting that. NiCorp has asked for the biggest gas rate hike in the history of Illinois, $208.5 million.
Whoa!
Yeah, now they haven't asked for one since like 2008. That was part of their excuse, but
right.
Our experts went over it, and the Illinois Attorney General's experts went over it, and CUB came up with the recommendation that we should cut that by at least 41%.
Yeah.
And we're also, the way we handle these cases is the AG's office looked at different issues, and we'll try to increase the amount that, you know, we're trying to decrease it as much as possible using all these different experts from different groups. So so that fight is happening, and that would go early next year, that would go into effect. So we're hoping to reduce that significantly. And then the Peoples Gas case, we've talked about this before. We're still dealing with the pipe replacement program. We're still in the process of trying to improve that program and to reduce the cost as much as possible, because the cost could be in the billions that customers would have to pay for this program. And what's been up to date, what's been wrong with this program has been an absolute disaster. It's been mismanaged. And there are ways that they have to do pipe replacement. Obviously, nobody disagrees with that. It's just how they do it, and they shouldn't treat this program like it's a blank check.
You know, I got a my deal is, I wish I could go into my boss and say I want a 96%, $96 billion increase. Yeah. I mean, that would be great, right?
I know. People don't, you know, they, you know, people don't realize, you know, they go before the Illinois Commerce Commission and they ask for these rate hikes. And again, it's not about, everybody wants the companies to be healthy. Nobody right. wants a company to be in trouble. But this is the crux of these cases are the definition of healthy. And often the definition by the utility is something that's exorbitant, we would argue. And that's what we try to do is we try to, you know, do our best to go through these cases. And Julie is awesome. She's our litigation director. And let me tell you, she puts in long hours trying to pick apart these cases and try to reduce these rate hikes as much as possible.
But don't they go into it with the idea that they're going to be decreased?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, they're not supposed to do that, and there's, you know, we can't, you know, we just go into the cases and we and we do it. But, you know, we were able to cut, you know, about 41%, just Cub looking at it, was able to cut the NICOR rate hike by about 41%. So, you know, it's a yearly dance that we do with the utilities. Is I'm glad that they have groups, not only Cub, but AARP and the Illinois Attorney General's Office, to be fighting, you know, these rate hikes. It can be depressing sometimes when to see how much they're asking for. But you look at how much has been saved over time. Thank goodness there have been groups that have been standing up, you know, for consumers.
Now, I got another thing.
Uh-oh.
Another bone to pick.
Oh, God.
Okay. And I know some of my visually impaired people would tell me I'm a fool, I'm an idiot, that, you know, be treated the normal way that everybody else does. I agree. But the one thing is directory assistance.
Oh.
For people who are not computer savvy.
Yeah.
If you go and make a long information call, you're paying like $3 for that call.
Yeah.
What used to be a free call. Can't the companies do something for people with a disability, a proven disability, you know, like visually handicapped, that sort of thing? Somebody who can't dial a phone.
Oh, if you can't dial a phone, you know, that's a really good point. Because there is a free directory assistance service if you dial 1-800-3411. But you're saying if you can't use a...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, let me give that to you. It's 1-800-3411. So it's 1-800-373-3411. That's free directory assistance. Now, there's always a catch.
Yeah.
They'll give you an ad. You might have to listen to an ad to get that number, but to me, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like you said, $2 to $3 per call for traditional information can be really high.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. 1-800-373-3411, and it's still working, which is good. So if you call that number, you can use free directory assistance.
How do they work? Do they get a grant? Or how's it done?
I think they get by on advertising revenue.
Ah,
so
okay.
You have to be careful. One time my wife was trying it, and she accidentally pushed the wrong button, and it put her off into this ad. And you don't want to do that. You know, you just want to ignore the ad and just get that darn number.
Sure, sure. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm sure you're going to be able to come back in a few months. Or at least two or three, to tell us what the going rate's going to be for natural gas.
Oh, sure.
Coming up for the winter. And
yeah, we can talk. That would be great to talk about that, and because that's really important. And hopefully it's not going to be too bad. It was up a little bit from last winter. This past winter was up a little bit from the winter before, and we're hoping that it'll be stabilized this winter.
I hope so, too. Well, Jim Chilson, have fun.
You too. Enjoy life, sir.
And don't get to camera. Don't get to be a camera hog, okay?
I'll try not to be. Thank
it's
you.
Jim Chilson from the Citizens Utility Board.
1 in 6 of the wounded U.S. soldiers evacuated from Iraq and Afghanistan battle zones suffered eye injuries. That's the highest rate of eye injuries since the Civil War. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, part of the Library of Congress, is stepping up to help. NLS works with military hospitals, rehab centers, and groups such as the Blinded Veterans Association to make sure that service members who have sacrificed so much for their country can still experience the pleasures of reading. Through the free NLS Talking Book Program, eligible veterans have access to thousands of bestsellers, biographies, westerns, self-help books, and more, and a variety of magazines. Veterans receive priority service from NLS, but any U.S. resident who is blind, has low vision, or cannot hold a book because of a physical illness or disability may sign up for the program. To learn more about what NLS can do for you or a friend or loved one, visit www.loc.gov/NLS or call 1-888-NLS-READ.
Well, as usual, Bill knocks it out of the park with his segment.
Always.
And, yeah, it was lots of great information, and who doesn't mind saving money on their utilities? They can be able to spend it on other things, especially as we get out of the summer months. We have holiday season coming up, and you can spend that extra money elsewhere. And it sounded like there were some good events that were coming up as well.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, as Bill mentioned, you know, you can see more on the Citizens Utility. You can find out more on their website and get more information.
I actually was able to interview the Neo Futurist Theater. We had a couple people come in from the theater, and they actually offer some touch tour and audio description for, they actually do a play, which is actually 30 plays in 60 minutes.
30 plays in 60 minutes.
Yes. And they actually, as you can imagine, it's a very, very fast paced, up tempo craziness that, you know, you really have to get into that mindset of, okay, this is going to change really, really rapidly. There is going to be some yelling back and forth, some great sound effects, some good music. It is geared towards the younger crowd, I guess. But if you're a person who's young at heart, you might enjoy this as well. But yeah, here's an interview I did with Neo Futurist. Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff. I have another artistic segment for you out there. I actually have a couple people from the Neo Futurist Theater, and I have Lily and Kurt here who will introduce themselves, and then we'll get into a little bit more about the Neo Futurist and what they have to offer.
Yeah. My name's Kurt Chang. I am artistic director and ensemble member of the Neo Futurists. I've been in the company since 2008, performing in our weekly show, which is a series, an ongoing series, a reoccurring show of 30 plays in 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Lily?
My name is Lily. I've been an ensemble member with the Neo Futurists for 4.5 years, just mm-hmm. about, and I have been the education and access coordinator for a little over 2 years now, so I help facilitate all the accessible programming at the theater, as well as writing and performing.
Okay, and that actually works out pretty good, because that's my next question, is talking about the accessibility options that you guys offer. Would you like to go into that a little bit more in detail?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we do a wide variety of programming at the theater, artistic mm-hmm. programming. The staple of our work is our weekly late night show, which is called The Infinite Wrench. When you saw it, it was in previews and it was called These 30 Plays, but okay. The current name is The Infinite Wrench. And that show runs every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Fridays and Saturdays are late at 11:30, and Sundays are 7 p.m. shows. Mm-hmm. That runs 50 weeks of the year all the time.
Okay.
And the accessible programming that we have, is that occasionally we've just begun offering audio description and touch tours in our space. Mm-hmm. So we did the very first one, which you attended, in January. The hope is to do another one this summer and get on a schedule of 6 months and then quarterly at least mm-hmm. to make that work available to the blind community. We also have done some accessible performances offsite. Our space is a second floor space, so it's difficult to access by wheelchair, but last year, in partnership with Victory Gardens, we offered two physically accessible performances that also included audio description and touch tours, as well as captioning and ASL.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that twice last year at Victory Gardens. This year, actually in just a couple months, we have another off-site physically accessible show available at Steppenwolf.
Okay.
So we're in the process of evolving our accessible programming and finding the venues that can continue to show our work and places across the city that it makes sense to bring our work to, to kind of get out of our second floor space and get more people to the show. That's the biggest show that's upcoming. We also offer, we're in the second run of an accessible introductory class. So we teach classes at our space.
Okay.
but for folks with mobility impairment or who have trouble getting into our space, we're beginning a program of running accessible writing and performing classes off-site. So we're doing that at Victory Gardens right now that just started. They're going to have a culminating performance with services, including audio description, touch tours, captioning, and ASL at Victory Gardens on May 1st. So we have some exciting early spring stuff coming up and early summer stuff. With some hope down the line to also offer another show for that's captioning specific with ASL in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kurt, you're next. So, you are the art director, is that correct?
Artistic director.
Artistic director.
Yeah.
So what does that entail of, like, I know when I went to the 30 plays and now you said it's the rent. What is it?
The infinite wrench.
Infinite wrench.
Yeah.
And you guys develop your own concepts for each one of the 30 plays. Like, the way that that works is it's 30 plays in 60 minutes is what you guys try to do.
Yes.
And, like, how does that come about? Like, how do you put that together? And, like, like for the actors and actresses being able to keep that going and it's switching every week is something that I would imagine is quite a difficult task.
It is. And difficult. We're totally into difficult tasks. So the theater, we're a unique theater in that we perform, we write and perform our own work. Those 30 plays that you watch on any given night, those 2-minute plays that we performed are written by the active ensemble. So we're a theater company that is consistently making our own work on a weekly basis, and we're a small ensemble of about 11 folks at any given time. And we also abide by, or we write towards the aesthetic of neo-futurism, which is an art movement that has constraints inside of it that we write towards. And what that means is that everything that we write is truthful. It's from us. It's towards the world as it is, which is to say, like, if you see a play at at Steppenwolf or Goodman or the Hypocrites, they're performing characters. You see characters, you see like a set, and you're transported into another world when you come to the theater. For us, we don't play characters. We attempt to be ourselves on stage, and everything that we say and everything that we write and perform on the stage is true to our lives. And also, everything that we're doing, we are actually doing. So we never pretend to be tired, or we never pretend that something is heavy when it's not. Everything in the theater and in the moment is based on actual tasks. With that, with those constraints, with that aesthetic, what we have, and then writing towards that, we have the ongoing show of the Infinite Wrench, is to write brand new plays every week, depending on how many plays we take out of the existing previous menu, and it's for my job as artistic director, my job is actually the same as all the other ensemble, is that I write and perform the plays that we do every single week. And not to go into it too much, but my job as artistic director is to be the biggest voice and advocate towards how we work and what we do and our our mission as a theater company.
Yeah, it seems like you guys have some big personalities that can be in that room at the same time. I thought it was quite funny. I was sitting kind of in the middle area, and there's an aisle right next to me, and some of you guys, when you weren't a part of a specific play, you'd be huffing and puffing because you guys are booking most of the time. Like, you guys are always going, and so I thought you guys should have some, like, oxygen masks for you guys to catch your breath, maybe. But I definitely enjoyed it. It was very up-tempo, high-paced, you know, it can get a little loud at times. So it is definitely something that if you're looking for something off the beaten trail, I would definitely say this would be one of those things that's it is a bit different than what most people would be expecting from a theater performance.
It's the show's been called a fusion of, in the past, I think a way people describe it is a combination of sport, poetry, and living newspaper. So that almost sounds dated, but I think there's a sporty, there's an athletic aspect to the show, right? Almost. Because the task of performing 32-minute plays in only an hour requires us to hustle, and it's exciting for an audience for that reason, and the fact that at any given moment, from play to play, you're either seeing something that's serious or political or sort of abstract and poetic or very, very funny. Takes the audience on this crazy roller coaster ride, and then we're I guess operating the roller coaster and on it at the same time. So we're moving through all that work, and you have to be very dexterous and also know how to catch your breath when you need to. Yeah.
One of the things I want to kind of, like, before we finish, is kind of go into the concept of how people pay to get into your show. Okay. This was definitely something that was surprising to me. So if you can go into that a little bit.
Yeah, we actually charge people not a fixed price, but a random admission. And it's $9. You pay $9 plus whatever you roll on a six-sided die. So it's between $10 and $15, depending on how lucky you are that night.
Okay.
But you can also, that's in cash as you walk up. You can also pay online, and you'll pay $20 using your credit card, any major credit card. And then when you get to the location, you roll a die and you get $1 to $6 back.
Okay.
So, and that's actually a relatively new feature. We've been doing, we've been writing and performing ever since 1988 when the theater opened up. And, but we've always let people in using this method of, like, of this random admission rate. And it's kind of like, I talked about the aesthetic of truth and honesty and actual task and place in the theater. There's also an element of chaos and chance that we embrace, and that is that's an illusion, or in it's a reference to, like, the world being a chaotic place, and a place where it's like things aren't determined, like you don't have control over everything.
Right.
So
I think, just in closing, why don't you give people the information of where Neo Futures is at, and then once again, just kind of go over a few of the things coming up for you guys.
Yeah. So we're at 5153 North Ashland. That's in the Andersonville neighborhood. It is off of the Red Line, the Berwyn Red Line stop. And we perform there every Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and Sundays at 7.
Okay.
What else?
Website?
What else should I say about it? Websites, www.neofuturists.org.
Okay.
And make sure you're at the Chicago one and not the San Francisco and New York one.
Yeah. Okay.
And our next accessible performance, with audio description and touch tours, as well as captioning and ASL, will happen over two nights at Steppenwolf Theater in their 1700 space. 1700 North Halsted, and that's going to happen on June 2nd and 3rd. We'll be announcing which services you can use on which date soon. So that'll be the same show, The Infinite Wrench. So it'll be an opportunity to see all that work in a physically accessible space, additionally with services for blind folks and deaf folks.
Yeah, excellent. And I should point out that our home space is not technically or not certified physically accessible. Mm-hmm. But we have ways of getting people in, and we're more than happy to get, like, people can call in or write us and ask for and just talk to us about exactly what they need, and we can usually accommodate anyone's needs that okay. they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably experienced this when you took the touch tour, but part of the whole adventure of the show is that we're in like a twisty-turny space, and yep. it's exciting, and mm-hmm. things are moving fast. But in spite of that, we're deeply committed to making any accommodations anyone needs to be able to have that experience. So okay. it can be exciting, but it's meant to be fun, and we try to make it as fun as possible.
Well, I thank you both, Lily and Kurt. Thanks for coming in. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it, and I'll definitely be checking it out again. Maybe I'll go to the Steppenwolf one, and hopefully we'll see some additional people out there to see what it's all about.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Brett.
Thank you. This is Brett Shishkoff. I am happy to have these two guests with us this week, and I will be with you guys again soon with another segment on whatever I feel is accessible and fun out there that I think you guys might enjoy as well. So until next time, you guys all have a great day.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I'm dedicated to educating the public because it's important for all of us to understand this debilitating disease. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because every 70 seconds, someone in America is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. That's more than 1,000 people a day. Preliminary data show that exercise, a healthy diet, and keeping your mind active may help reduce your risk. At our website, ahaf.org, experts will answer your questions and address your concerns. Find out about promising research the Foundation funds and learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease. That's 1-800-437-2423.
Oh, Brett, so have you ever been to the Neofuturist?
Yeah, I was. It's probably... Oh, man. It's been less than a year. I want to say it was probably around Christmas time. And my dad went with me, and so it ended up that a lot of interesting things happen when you go to the Neo-Futurist. Like, they actually had at the time, you actually drew a card, and based off of, no, it was, you rolled the dice. Uh-huh. Based off of the dice roll, that's what you paid to get in.
Hmm.
But okay. they actually had it different the day I went. Uh-huh. Whatever you rolled, the dice roll, they gave you that month, that
oh,
amount of money.
Nice.
So... I actually was able to go for free, so I ended up just donating it back to them, that money that they were actually going to give me. I just gave that back to them. And then when you come in, they actually give you a cracker, and then you can either put cheese, you know, like a can of, they have that spray can of cheese, or you can put jelly on your cracker as a nice little snack right when you come in. So it was definitely really... like fun place to go to. There's lots of energy, like I said before. It's just a fun time. I definitely recommend it, that if you want something just a little different, off the wall craziness, this is definitely a fun experience. The Neo Futurist Theater, it's on the north side. It's great. I definitely enjoyed myself.
Well, I'll have to check it out one of these days.
I would recommend it highly.
And speaking of things that are fun and interesting, I recently spoke with Vineet Agarwal, who is a medical student. Brett, get this. He is working on videos to help create awareness and basically debunk the different myths and misperceptions that are still, misconceptions that are still out about people with disabilities or with different health conditions. And he actually interviewed myself and our colleague Tyler Buckelder from the Lighthouse. He did a video about us, about living with vision loss. And why don't we take a listen and hear more about this very unique and exciting project? You know, here on The Beacon, we always cover topics related to disabilities, to programs that will improve the lives of people with disabilities. a big thing nowadays is social media and technology. And, you know, that is helping, in a way, change the different beliefs about disabilities and other health conditions. Today I am speaking with Vineet Agarwal, who is working on a very exciting project that I personally found very interesting. And he will be talking a little bit about the Real Talk campaign. Vineet, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sandy, for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself first. I understand that you're a medical student at Northwestern.
Yeah, so I'm a second-year medical student at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. I've been very passionate about medicine ever since I've been little. My father's a physician, so I think it kind of just passed along from him since he was so excited about the field.
Sure.
I became excited about what he showed me, and I think that's how I fell in love with the field. Other than medicine, I really have an enjoyment for politics, so I make sure I follow the news.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do as many political internships as I could have during my college years, and so I'm trying to still find ways to integrate medicine and politics together, and I think that kind of led to the Real Talk campaign.
Yeah, because I know that with us, you reached to the Lighthouse maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago that you were working on the video about living with vision loss. And I know for me, that really caught my attention. First, can you tell us, I know that you're working on this project, you know, all on your own for now, which I find particularly impressive. I know it's a lot of work to put into it, but can you tell us a little bit more background, how it got started?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, a project like this, for a while. It's been maybe a year that I've been thinking about it. And when I first was thinking about creating an organization related to news and stories, it was more so along the lines of trying to find ways to summarize the news in very concise ways, but also help people understand how it fits into the grand scheme of things, just because I have a policy background. Mm-hmm. I thought that I could provide my analysis skills. And this was something my friends had been complaining about for a while. But as I started to do more research into trying to create an organization like this, I saw that there are a bunch of organizations out there already doing it. But something I found interesting was that in these organizations and in a lot of news stories, it tends to focus on facts, figures, data, which, don't get me wrong, is very, very important. It's
sure.
What drives policy construction, helps us identify issues, and leads us on the right track, seeing if we are doing what's right. But I still think that the individual perspective, what's going on with the person with the problem, was lost among all the data. So I really wanted to find a way to focus in on those stories, because I think they can help identify outliers in the data. They can provide a more human face so that people are better able to understand what's going on with the issue, have a little bit more transparency. And then I also realized, kind of personally and among family and friends, that we tend to struggle to talk about really personal issues.
Mm-hmm.
We are afraid to be vulnerable, especially when it comes to very serious issues, like
sure.
an example being, say, mental health. People really don't like to talk about that. They keep it to themselves and hide it away, and they suffer in silence. So I also wanted to create an environment in which people are very comfortable expressing what's going on with them. And I think seeing other individuals share their stories and struggles will motivate them to do so as well. So it was kind of those two things that motivated me to do a campaign, the Real Talk campaign, that focuses on the stories and problems people are going through, but it's told through their experience.
Yeah, and it's because I watched your video on the Syrian refugee crisis, and it's, you know, like the person that you interviewed said that, you know, you can get, you know, a bunch of numbers and statistics, but they really don't mean a lot. You know, it you know, there's more impact from the, you know, the personal stories of people affected by all of these issues.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think he, in that interview, hit it home where it's, yeah, we really need to talk with the individual going through the issue or assisting with the issue just to get a better perspective on what's going on. It's a lot more relatable, and it really helps us understand the issue and work or motivate us to do something about it.
And now I mentioned that you did a video about living with blindness, and you also, you know, you interviewed me for that, and you also interviewed my colleague, Tyler Buckelder, about living as someone with a visual impairment. What are some of the other topics you have covered?
Yeah, so for the topics, usually I try to reach out to organizations that are nearby just to get a better perspective on what's going on, just because I could try and go out and find people, but I'd rather go to the experts with people who know what they're doing and deal with these issues. And in these organizations are probably people who are more comfortable talking about these problems. So topics we've covered so far have been sexual assault. So we've had a sexual assault survivor discuss her story of what that was like and how she's going through a recovery process. We have talked about depression, living with vision loss. We've also showed stories about living with lupus. So it's been a wide range of stories. We've also covered stories about living with homelessness. So we're hoping to cover as many stories as we can. But, I mean, it's a one-man project. So it's more so whenever I find these stories, then I'm able to create videos about them. So I'm trying to expand the project as much as I can. And I'd love to talk about more issues. I just have to be able to find individuals being willing and able to talk about these problems.
And I know that, you know, like you said, it's a very wide scope of different topics and issues. So, you know, there's a lot of stories to be told and, you know, information to share about all these topics. And, you know, I know that nowadays, you know, blogs and different videos on social media, you know, they're really helping to educate people about all of these issues. So, you know, personally, like I said, it's wonderful that you're working on a project like this.
Thank you. Yeah, I just thought, you know, I'm really passionate about politics and people, and I really want to do something I can to help.
Sure.
And I think this project is a way for me to do so, and I'm really happy to put the videos out there. I've gotten really positive feedback from different people saying that they really resonate with the individuals who have been speaking, or they've learned a lot through the video. So I'm just happy being able to touch the lives of even a few people. It motivates me to do this project even more.
So about how many people has this project reached? How many people have viewed approximately?
Yeah, so we showcase our videos on YouTube and Facebook, and through the YouTube channel, the Real Talk campaign, we've actually been able to reach at least 7,500 people in terms of views. Mm-hmm. Now, they may not be exactly different people, but through the analytics on YouTube and Facebook, we've definitely reached at least 3,500 different people.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, no, I was surprised with the staggering growth. I'd never expected it to grow this quickly. And so I'm hoping we can continue to reach an even wider audience, because what the hope is eventually is that with these videos, I can eventually turn the organization into a charity.
Sure.
And so that any money earned by the organization, a significant portion will go to organizations or groups that are working to address these issues. And it's interesting that YouTube has a system in which if you increase your view count, you can get a little bit of money through that. And so I'm hoping as it continues to grow and get more views, we can then have more money to give to organizations and further help individuals going through these problems.
And, you know, with your background, you know, I have to tell you this, that I think that for you, and not just for you, but for everyone, I think that, you know, this helps expand your knowledge. You know, in your case, you're going into the medical field, and, you know, I'm sure that it'll help you tremendously, like, get a better sense of the different issues faced by, you know, the people you serve, your patients, or, you know, whatever it might be. So that's the angle that I found particularly interesting.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It has actually been very much a growth process for me, and I've been able to improve myself through this whole project.
Sure.
When I've been talking to other individuals, I've actually seen aspects of myself in them. So I definitely realize that even though I may be going through these types of struggles, I'm definitely not alone. Mm-hmm. And there are individuals who have it worse than me, or sure. we tend to say have it worse.
Right.
But they're going through the same things. Mm-hmm. And so I really think it's been very enlightening, especially as an individual who wants to go into the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been able to learn to be comfortable conversing about these topics that we find more difficult to talk about in everyday society.
Sure.
When I was first approaching an individual I interviewed for HIV, as well as homelessness, I was very hesitant to ask the more hard-hitting questions or the more personal questions. But as I began to build a rapport with these individuals, I was able to see that they're very much comfortable sharing these things, and they actually want me to ask about these things just so that they can give a full understanding of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really been a development process for me to kind of get in there and really try and discuss these issues to the full extent that I can.
Yeah, because I know how you told me that when we did our interview, you know, that in medical school, you know, going to the topic of disabilities, you really don't, you know, cover that in medical school. So, you know, I know that this project will have a tremendous benefit for you.
Yeah, I think with a lot of issues, so at least our medical school, a lot of medical schools, I assume, try to do this, but we bring in individuals who are going through these problems
sure.
to discuss their stories and motivate us to be passionate about the field. But I think there are some issues in which we just kind of gloss over it rather mm-hmm. than going further into them.
Sure.
We've had a couple people talk about disabilities, but that was more in relation to physical disabilities like paraplegia.
Sure.
So when it comes to things like vision loss, hearing loss, kind of the more sensory losses, we've only seen that maybe in facts or figures. We really mm-hmm. haven't delved deeply into them. So this was the first time discussing these kind of things with you or Tyler. So mm-hmm. it was very exciting for me to do so. I was very nervous about it. But now that I got to meet you and him, I feel like I've made friends and I'm able to ask you guys anything.
Yeah, thanks. And I know that you've been here to the Lighthouse 3 times already. So, you know, we really appreciate your interest and your support as well. Support in the, you know, way that you're sharing more about vision loss and different misconceptions that people might have. So, you know, it's again, that's wonderful that you're working on this.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I hope to be back at the Lighthouse more frequently.
You'll be a frequent flyer here, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, where can people view these videos?
Yeah, so you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TheRealTalkCampaign, or on YouTube, you can just search mm-hmm. The Real Talk Campaign, or you can find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @real_talk_camp.
Okay.
So we post our videos on all of these forums.
So there's different ways of accessing them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to market it as much as I can just sure. so that we can get the word out and address the misconceptions or give advice to people who are going to similar struggles.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the future videos that you hope to be working on? Do you have any in store?
Yeah, so currently I've been working on a series called Living With, and mm-hmm. this series was a month-long series dedicated to individuals living with illnesses or chronic conditions. So like I said, we covered vision loss, we covered HIV, we covered lupus, and 2 more videos that should be out by the time this goes up mm-hmm. would be living with cancer mm-hmm. as well as living with anorexia.
Mm.
And once we complete the Living With series this month, we're actually hoping to do interviews with the LGBTQ community, just to understand their perspective and the struggle that's been going on with them. I'm hoping to do interviews in relation to the prison system and the injustices related to that and what it's like to have gone through the prison system and to come out of it. So it's a wide scope of topics, but we're hoping to discuss as much as we can. And if anyone has any suggestions, definitely leave them on any of our social media sites.
Great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share or add?
Yeah. We're trying to create a very inclusive community where anyone can talk about anything. So if you have any topics that you would like to see be covered, definitely let us know on any of our social media sites. Definitely get engaged and share your stories, just because that's how we can build a stronger community and be more comfortable talking about these problems. And make sure to check us out. I would really appreciate anyone engaging with our content.
Well, great. Well, Waneet, thank you so much for being with us today, and good luck. I know that the fall semester is getting here very fast, so good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome in to Luke's segment, the tech segment of the show. Once again, Luke Scriven is here to talk about what's going on in the Tools for Living store and also update us on new technology, adaptive technology. So how are you doing, Luke?
I'm doing good. I was thinking about the name for the show. The best I could come up with so far was Luke's Laboratory.
Oh. What could we be cooking in the laboratory?
Who knows?
All right. Well, that's pretty good. And we'll leave it like that. Or Luke's Lab.
There you go.
But I haven't had a chance to talk to you before we walked into the studio about what is going on. So what is going on?
Well, I got a few updates I was going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about something called the Jordy, which is a new device which is going to be coming to us very soon. And then I also wanted to go a little bit further into the Orcam update that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago. Okay. And I got a chance to use it finally and found out some interesting features which I didn't know it had, which are pretty cool. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit and then talk about some of our new services.
All right. So let's start. All What's right. first on the list?
First, I guess we'll talk about the Jordy. So this is a head-borne electronic magnifier, so you wear it on your head. It's like an electronic pair of glasses, and these have been pretty popular recently. We have a few different ones here. We've got one called the eSight and one called the Iris Vision and one called the New Eyes, and this is another one from Enhanced Vision. We should have our hands on it next week, so I'm looking forward to trialing it, and I'm hoping to tell people a little bit more about how it works next week. But I just wanted to give people a heads up on the fact that it's coming. These have been really popular amongst people. It helps them to see like the television or to read or to go to museums and see exhibits and things like that. So they're pretty flexible, and this one looks pretty good. And price-wise, it's on the lower end of the scale. So looking forward to trying that out and showing people, telling people what it can do next time.
And it's called the Jordy?
Yes, the Jordy. It's a J-O-R-D-Y. I'm pretty sure they named it from Geordi LaForge in Star Trek The Next Generation, because he had his visor that he used to see with. So, yeah, good call.
All right.
Uh-huh. So another thing is the Orcam. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, Orcam is a little camera that you wear on the side of your glasses, and it reads text to you, basically. So they just released a software update for that device, and it does some really interesting things. So before, I told people about the languages which are now available, which are French, Spanish, and English.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's got a couple of other tricks up its sleeve. So one thing is barcode scanning, which it can now do, and you basically hold a product in front of you and hold the barcode facing toward the camera, and it takes a picture of the barcode and it tells you what the product is. So that's really neat. It works really well. It's got a big database of products, and I thought that was interesting. Also, they have color identification. So if you look at a color for a few seconds, it will take a picture and try and tell you what color it is. And I haven't had a chance to try that out. My experience with other devices in the past has told me that it often doesn't work that well, but I haven't tried it out on the Orcam yet. But again, it was a free update, so I think that's pretty cool.
Okay.
And then another thing, just to make it even easier to use, previously when you wanted to have it read text to you, you had to press a button or point to the text and it would take a picture and read it to you. Now they've made it so you can literally just hold the paper in front of you with the text on that you want to read, and it will automatically start reading to you. So some really nice features, and for all current Orcam users, that was a free update, and anybody who buys it in the future will have that version of the software on. So good stuff.
All right, and how much is that retail for?
Well, there's two versions. They've got what they call the My Reader, and that one's $2,500. That one does the reading text to you, and that's pretty much its main function. It can also identify banknotes. The $3,500 version is called the My Eye, and that's the one that has things like facial recognition. That's the one with the barcode scanning on it and those kind of things. So you get a few more features for that extra money.
Okay. And is there a third item that you wanted to...
Yeah, so I just wanted to inform people about the new services that we've started offering at the Lighthouse. So one of those is in-home technology demonstrations, and we are keenly aware that people with a visual impairment can find it difficult to get transportation, to come to the Lighthouse to trial products. And so because of that, we are offering in-home demonstrations, so somebody can come to your house with different types of technology, demonstrate them to you, and you can see if they would do anything to enhance your quality of life. So that's one service which we're offering, and if you want to arrange something, if you want to get somebody to come out, you can call us at 312-997-3649. That's my number, and we can get something scheduled. The other thing we're doing is training, and so we have two tiers of training. We have training at the Lighthouse, that's $35 an hour, or training in your home, that's $60 an hour. And it could be on anything from accessing your computer to iPad to Android devices to how to better use your magnifier. Pretty much any technology-related tasks we can help you out with. And again, you can call 312-997-3649 if you wanted to discuss that further.
Okay. Now, if you wanted to sign up for either of those demos or get training, can you do that at the roadshows?
Yeah, if you wanted to come to the roadshows and discuss that further, we would be more than glad to do that. We have two roadshows coming up. We have August 30th at Wheeling Township, 1616 North Arlington Heights Road. And we have October 5th, Palos Hills Community Center. That's 8455 West 103rd Street. So please feel free to come on out and discuss any of these things with us there.
And, I imagine there's been a lot of changes. As we mentioned before, Tom's gone. And I know, is Eric still with you with road shows?
That is up in the air at the moment. Eric is not in our department currently, but he may still be coming out to do the road shows with us. If it's not him, we will have somebody else working with us. And so there'll be myself, another person, and Sandra Valentino, who has always come out with us. So we will definitely have people there to help you out.
Enough people, because I imagine now you're probably over, what, to 800 different products that you showcase?
We have a lot. I've never counted them. I don't dare. but let me put it like this. Our van is completely full from floor to ceiling with different products. So there's pretty much something for everybody there.
All right. Well, that's Luke Scriven from Luke's Laboratory and everything you need to know. Don't forget, if you have if questions about the ORCAM, you can always call Luke. And the number is 312-997-3649 for him, and he can update you on that. And then we'll have further discussion about the Jordy in weeks to come. I'm Brian Hawkins with Luke Scriven. This is The Beacon.
Oh, guess what, Brett?
It's that time, isn't it?
It's that time.
Oh,
can
man.
You believe it?
Just flew by.
Always.
It's been fun. As usual, I enjoy my sandy time each week to be able to catch up on the happenings. And once
Likewise.
Again, happy birthday.
Thank you, Brett.
I hope you have a great celebration this weekend.
Spending with friends and family. What else can I ask for?
Yep, that's pretty much it's a good start. And anything on top of that is just icing on the cake.
That's it. Well, everyone, thank you once again for listening to The Beacon, and also special thanks to Dr. Janet Slick, our president and CEO, and to Chris Radio Director, Brian Hawkins. Again, thank you all for listening.